Right. Are we on?
I think we are.
Okay. Hello, I'm Simon Mercer, and welcome to Crave. This is the videocast and podcast which is dedicated to music and film and television and theatre and pretty much anything and everything that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and me lately.
Absolutely. So this week we've got a potpourri, a pastiche even, haven't we?
Yeah, we do.
A patchwork, possibly a panoply.
No.
Possibly. I'm not going to commit yet.
Okay.
Of entertainment stuff on there.
We do
indeed. So where should we go first? We've got... Has it been a year and a half, 2 years of waiting?
I think it has been two.
For Game of Thrones, and finally the last series is with us.
Yep.
And obviously that's going to need to be dissected.
Absolutely.
Minute, minuscule.
To within an inch of its life.
Oh, the exegesis shall commence very, very shortly. Yes.
Now, in a completely different sort of area, just in a few days, a member of the British royal family will be in New Zealand, Prince William, no less, and he's going to be here. He's actually here in time for Anzac Day, but he's principally here to meet and some of the people involved in that terrible massacre in Christchurch. And while all this is going on, of course, the country's continued to mark that event, including with a couple of big charity concerts, one of which you've been to.
Absolutely, and as well as you should be, I mean.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to hearing what you've got to say
about
that,
Steve. Very definitely, yes. Speaking of music, I also went to see American singer-songwriter Nathaniel Ratcliffe and his rather peculiarly named band, The Night Sweats.
Yes, it sounds like a medical condition, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure the name works, but then, to be fair, I'm not completely convinced the concert worked either.
Okay.
We'll say more about that.
All right. Well, something I didn't think would work, but actually I was quite unexpectedly surprised by was, I'm almost embarrassed to say it, another zombie series.
Another.
There's been so many,
has,
I know.
Yes.
I watched one called Black Summer. It's on Netflix.
Oh.
I actually found it pretty damn good.
Well, Netflix is the source of all goodness in TV these days, isn't it? Most.
Most.
Anyway. And then, obviously, coming up very, very shortly, the big cinematic release, I think it's later this month.
Yes.
I'm not paying that close attention because they're all rubbish. There's more avenging going on later this month.
The end game, no less.
Oh, please. We can only hope. But in the meantime, DC, I mean, you wonder why they keep going, don't you, really?
Yeah.
But they finally actually managed to come out with a good one.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought, too.
Okay.
Yeah, Shazam.
I didn't even know which. I wasn't sure what Shazam was, but okay.
Well, no.
I look forward to hearing you tell me about that.
Let's face it. It's a hard stretch for me to find anything good to say about those films.
Yeah. Okay.
So, where should we start?
Well, then? I think let's start with something that's probably still fresh in our minds.
Yes.
Actually, like the Avengers saga, it's sprawled over just about a decade, and that is, of course, Game of Thrones.
So let's see, we've got something that's sprawling over a massive fictional mythical universe.
Yes.
For far too long, with a cast of characters that nobody can keep track of.
No.
And magic.
Yes.
You're right, basically, it's Avengers, isn't it?
That's right.
Yes.
The thing about, and in fact, with the last Avengers film, it very much went into Game of Thrones territory, because they both now have scenarios where principal characters have been killed off.
Right.
So, but you know, the expectation on this final season of Game of Thrones has been huge with such a long wait still.
Yes, that's a large part of
you know,
it, yeah.
2 years. And so I guess perhaps the very first episode, which has just come out in New Zealand a few days ago, there was a bit of catching up to do. That was how it felt like to me. How did you react to that first episode?
Well, I think catching up is possibly a polite way of putting it.
Okay.
Because, First of all, there was an awful lot of callbacks to the very, very first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's... And we should say up front here, this is going to be spoiler-tastic.
Well, it has to be, yes.
I mean, it's on TV, guys. Come on, seriously.
Yeah, yes.
And we'll basically do this an episode dissection here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's fair enough that we are going to spoil the crap out of it. Actually, to be fair, there wasn't that much to spoil. But wonderful opening sequence.
Yes.
Where you've got the parade of arrivals into
Winterfell.
Yeah. But you'll notice, if you actually go back and I didn't watch it myself, but I saw someone put a video together of this on YouTube somewhere, a comparison of the two scenes side by side, and the colour palette is very different.
Yeah.
The original one where you've got the Baratheons and the Lannisters rocking up to Winterfell.
Yes.
Everything's golden.
Yep.
Everything's warm and it's bright and it's colourful.
Yeah,
this
that.
Time round, winter has come.
Yes.
Winter has come.
So it's
grey, it's dark, it's cold. Mm-hmm. It's blue.
Blue, yeah.
The colour palette shifted enormously. Yep.
Winter has come.
Winter has come.
Yes.
And you've got, in the first one, you had Arya Stark climbing up on things to get a good view.
Yes, I remember that.
In this one, you see her sort of stepping aside to let the little lad...
Yes.
See,
yes.
So they're trying very hard to ground this new series in the context of...
Yes, yes.
But do you remember the very, very first thing that you saw in the very first episode? How the very first episode started?
I think I do. I think the very first thing you see is the gate come up at the wall.
And where did they go after that?
They would go north.
Yeah.
A small group of men hunting for wildlings. And, of course, they get caught up by the Walking Dead, but and they head off into the snow, don't they? Yeah,
so if you remember, what the one fella stumbles across is a body with body parts arrayed around it.
That's right. Yes.
Does that sound familiar from that our last episode?
Okay, that does. Now that you've said it like that,
yes, exactly.
Make me think of the child on the wall.
Exactly. Yes. So it's a very, very clear callback to that episode.
I was wondering where that had come up before, and you just reminded me.
That's exactly
it. Very much.
That wasn't as gratuitous.
No,
nasty.
I didn't.
It was nasty. Let's be fair about this.
But they don't tend to do things without a reason.
Not
those writers.
Well, unless it involves people getting naked.
There is that.
Okay.
Well, that's I mean, I very much also thought it was just reminding us of who was where and putting people on the chessboard, if you like, on the map. So-and-so's here, so-and-so's there. Cersei's still down in King's Landing. Yeah. All that sort of stuff.
Broadly speaking, everyone's up in Winterfell right now except Cersei.
Yes, and...
Qyburn and Bronn.
Yes, yeah.
And that's your lot.
Pretty much, yeah. And that's right. So it's... although there was the interest in some characters reacquainting them with each other, like the Hound and Arya, for example... And some people, like Daenerys, meeting Sansa for the first time.
Yes.
So there was some of that interest. But in terms of plot development, not a huge amount, really. Just more of a scene setter, it felt like, largely.
No, but those couple of relationships getting established. Mm. So it's clear, Daenerys, who started out early on being this fantastic character, who then developed this massive messianic streak, when she suddenly said, you know, well, I could just nip over and capture Westeros, but I'm going to liberate all the slaves in the Eastern continent, whatever it's called, first.
Yes.
So she's got this massive messianic thing going on.
Yeah.
And suddenly no one's impressed with her.
Yes. Also, she's in a place where they don't know her.
Right. But Sansa is not at all impressed.
No.
Sansa's going, who the hell do you think you are?
That's right.
Samwell Tarly, who is, let's face it, George R. R. Martin.
Yes, okay.
He's the chubby, schlubby guy who gets all his knowledge from books and then saves people.
Yeah.
He is George R. R. Martin.
Okay.
And that, I'm pretty certain that's going to be significant as this whole thing plays out. Samwell's going to be more crucial than we imagine. He's not impressed with her.
No.
For good reason.
Absolutely.
And John's starting to wonder if Auntie Daenerys is really all she needs.
Auntie Daenerys. Well, of course, one of the things that this episode does, which was set up by the end of the previous season, was Jon now receives the knowledge from Sam that he indeed is the true heir to the Iron Throne.
Yes.
And he is told about his hereditary links to the Targaryens.
Yes.
So we don't yet know how he will process that and what will come out at the other end, but... So that was a significant part of this first episode.
Oh, definitely, yes.
We were teased at the end of the last season with Jaime Lannister wandering off by himself, heading north.
Yes.
And right at the end, we get a little taste of his arrival, and I thought it was a very telling little moment when he sees Bran.
Ooh, yes.
And in the knowledge that he is responsible for...
Yes.
This young boy, now young man, in a wheelchair sitting before him.
Yes.
So there were some quite telling moments. I must ask you about this, though. I felt I didn't know what to make of a scene in the middle of this first episode
where
and Daenerys hop on a dragon each and take off for a wee little joyride across the skies.
Yeah.
It almost felt like a Disney film for a second.
This was not Game of Thrones, was it?
No. But I mean, back in my mind, I was thinking, this is all rather frivolous.
Yeah.
But they're setting this up for something. Though, again, the writers wouldn't do that without some thing in the back of their minds, but leading somewhere.
Well, how do we get inside their heads? Which is a terrifying place to be, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So given that they're establishing this wonderful, lovey-dovey, beautiful relationship between these two characters, they are going to have the most monstrous falling out at some point.
Monstrous might be the right word.
Yes. and I think this was Debbie, our intrepid guest reviewer, who pointed this out at the very end. It's always been made clear that John was a king because it was good for his people.
Yes.
He was a leader because it suited the people he was trying to serve by leading.
Yes.
Whether he was going to be the king in the north or he's going to be the Lord Commander of the Night's
Watch. Yes.
He was those things because his followers needed him to be.
Yep.
Daenerys wants to be queen because she wants to be queen.
Yeah, she believes she's the rightful person to hold that position.
It's that messianic thing we were talking about a moment or two ago. Mm. And so John has stepped back from his positions of power because he thought that's how he served the people. And then Sam says, would she do the same?
Yes.
Of course she bloody would. You've got to be kidding. There's no way in the world she'd do the same.
Yeah. So,
where is my throne?
The other thing I was interested in, Steve, and I just by chance was out of New Zealand for a couple of days at an airport, and I picked up a copy of the first book.
Right.
And I hadn't read the books. And I was really interested, and I'm only, haven't finished it yet, but interested by a few things. The books don't have this type of salty language or the full-on descriptions of sex and violence that the TV series has done.
No.
But the script or the dialogue in the books, in many, many occasions in the first couple of hundred pages I've read, the writers of the TV series have lifted chunks of dialogue and put it into the characters' mouths.
And I think the fact that you recognised that dialogue.
Yeah.
There's classic lines where Tyrion says something about cripples, bastards, and broken things.
Yes.
Or he says something about, yes, that's what I am. Don't forget it, they won't let you.
Yeah.
But wear it like armour.
And all dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes.
Yes.
So some and the really good lines.
Well, we remember them, don't we? The fact that you recognise these lines when reading the book shows they were worth nicking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so
and I the reason I thought about that is I felt last season, where I think we were told that was the first time the books had finished, and so the writers were and George Martin's still along for the ride, but they're not going off the script of a book.
Not
and
anymore.
It had a different feel.
Yes.
I feel to me. You know, I was trying to get to the bottom of that. And it's just a bit like they haven't got that a detailed scene with all the nuances of the double dealing and the politicking to draw on.
Not quite. No.
And it also feels like they've got such a lot of plot in motion.
Yes.
They know they've got to resolve it.
Yes.
And even though that was all of last season, now heading to the last one, at times it's felt to me like they've just had to move things along to just progress matters, and things have jumped from scene to scene quite quickly.
And yet they still found time
for
the magic carpet ride.
They did. So that I'm sure that's going to be,
we've only got six episodes left and yet they moved, they took their time. It was languid.
It was and I wondered whether one other thought, you mentioned the whole John Daenerys potential bust up. Of course we've got another dragon
which
we're introduced to at the end of the previous season, who has died and come back to life again, and that could potentially, I don't know, set up some sort of mid-air confrontation, perhaps. I don't know. We'll
see. That's probably where the entire budget for the series go. Yeah. In the meantime, it was a small mercy that Daenerys and Jon Snow didn't start singing "A Whole New World Is a Bloody Dragon." That scene did
it
not
almost,
work.
It almost felt like an Aladdin type scene.
Yes.
You're right, a magic carpet ride.
Yeah. It did. Certainly, one little theory that I'm going to just like leave out there. I didn't come up with this.
Yes, go on.
But I'm going to take credit for it anyway. So there's a scene where non-Maester Qyburn interrupts Bronn doing what Bronn does best.
Yes.
And says, the Queen wants you to go.
Yep.
Have we heard the Queen express that particular request?
No, we have not.
Has Qyburn heard the Queen express that particular request? Or is Qyburn going rogue?
With what purpose?
Ah, well, there you go.
I mean, that's fascinating.
If he can show up at the Red Keep with, hey, Cersei, look what I did for you, Queen. I've got two of them. Maybe, I don't know.
Ooh, that's a good one to ponder. Okay.
Right.
All right. Okay.
So are we going to do speculation? What's the end game? Are we going to do this?
We could do. Well, I get the sense, well, not to the nth degree we won't, but I mean, it feels to me like Daenerys will come undone in some way.
Good.
It feels like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about Cersei. I think the Cersei and Jaime dynamic is, you know, has obviously, it's shifted.
Yeah.
I could see Jaime dying a heroic and tragic death, I think.
Popular opinion seems to have Jaime killing Cersei.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, what do we know?
I'm not sure about Tyrion either now. I'm not sure. I mean, Jon, as you alluded to a little earlier, is the one who's been the most selfless.
Yes.
And on the face of it, the most heroic.
Yes.
That doesn't mean he's gonna survive.
No, that means he's gonna die 30 seconds before he gets to the Iron Throne.
So I'm not quite sure. I've tried to avoid some of the theories, but I've seen it. I couldn't help but notice some reference to Bran's possible ties to the Night King.
Yes.
And I'm not quite sure how that would play out. But I'm not quite sure if you're going to say this is a Game of Thrones and there's going to be a winner.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. I don't...
That's an interesting point.
Do you have a sense of who you would... There might be people we want to win, but whether they will or not.
Well, for the longest time, I latched onto that line about cripples, bastards and broken things.
Yeah.
And I was sure that there was going to be some sort of triumvirate at the end of it, right, revolving around that. But now that we know that Jon's not a bastard,
yes,
that boogers up that theory.
Who are the broken ones?
Well,
you've got
Tyrion, obviously.
Tyrion. What about
Bran?
Bran. What about old Theon Greyjoy?
Oh, yes, he's broken. He's a broken thing.
There's a few broken.
Well, his thing is broken.
Well, yeah,
broken off.
Yes.
So yeah, we could take a more fluid reading of that. Obviously,
we could.
It was always ambiguous. No, I'm going to go on record here and say he's going to be Tyrion.
Okay.
Because he's the one. He's possibly the one sort of A-list character who's never shown any ambition toward it. Cersei's not going to end up on the throne because she wants it. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
It's either him or the Night Walker. The Night King.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. I'm not quite sure, but okay. But we'll track that along. All right. We've had given that a good go.
Although Samwell Tarly will be the Kingmaker. Like I say, he is the George R.R. Martin surrogate in that show.
I thought his reaction to the knowledge imparted by Daenerys that she had killed his father and brother could come back to bite Daenerys at some point.
Well, you did notice he's usually a very lightweight, very frothy character, and you suddenly saw steel.
Yeah, you did.
Very much so.
Okay.
So anyway.
All right, so, I think we've done that rather well.
We could, quite frankly, I mean, we should do a sidelining Game of Thrones episode recap. Hey, look, there's only one series left.
There's only six episodes or whatever.
This will be a regular feature now.
Okay, but from a fantasy world, let's pause, take a breath, and move into the real world, and in particular, the world which...
something that's sadly all too real.
All too real, and we're talking about those terrible events in Christchurch, not that long ago, a month and 5 weeks ago.
Yes.
In the last week or so, Steve, there have been two pretty big charity concerts organised called Aroha Nui.
A bit of show and tell here.
You Are Us. Oh, that's fantastic. There we go. You Are Us, Aroha Nui. And you went to the one in Auckland, at Spark Arena, there we go. And there's a fantastic report.
Well, really, the production values in this episode are just beyond.
Yeah.
Beyond.
But I just want to say, I thought you did a great review, and there's some fantastic photographs on cravepodcast.com.
You're too kind.
The website that Steve and I run, cravepodcast.com. I liked your review because you didn't get completely caught up in the very worthy cause of it and necessarily say everyone performed brilliantly.
For the most part, to be fair, they did.
Mostly did. But the only one or two comments you made.
Let's go to the whole point of the thing. You had about 20 acts who were playing in Auckland. There were even more in Christchurch, as is only right and fitting.
Yes.
But you've got Marlon Williams there, who's currently hot property. Yeah, you've got Shapeshifter. You had 660.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was there? I'm trying to think.
David Dobbin.
Of course, he
Stan
opened and closed
Walker.
It. Yep.
Yep. Jason Kerrison. I'm just looking at your review right now.
Oh, yes. Quite a huge cast of characters there.
And a range of different performance as well.
Very definitely, yes. You've got the old, sort of that, you know, people like Jason Kerrison are definitely sort of the more mature and
yes,
and old school. And then you've got people like Swidert, who are very definitely of the moment. There was a rapper of Palestinian origin named Ilbaz.
Uh-huh.
A young woman of Pakistani origin named Chai. Who, so you've got, you and these are doing sort of like your hardcore rap type stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You've got the whole spectrum there. You've got old school New Zealand, old style Maori and Pakeha. You've got younger immigrant New Zealand, and you've got the traditional. I mean, how safe can you get? They've got Dave Dobbin.
Yeah.
And then absolutely. you've got at the other end of the spectrum, you've got, like I say, serious rap going on.
Yeah.
So they covered all the bases.
They did, yep.
And it was, considering this obviously pulled together at short notice, you had, for example, Stan Walker with Seth Hapu singing Don't Dream It's Over in Te Reo Māori.
Oh, nice.
Which is quite something to do. I mean, it's the unofficial national anthem of the country.
Yeah.
And to sing that in Māori at short notice, that's impressive.
I imagine it'd be quite something.
It was indeed quite something. Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't realise what they were doing until halfway through. It was too late to video it.
Okay.
But it was lovely. It really was. You had Jason Kerrison with the Dilworth Choir doing Hallelujah.
Okay.
Very, very well.
Okay.
It worked. It was fantastic.
I was on national radio. They carried some of the Christchurch one live, or just not long after being live, and I heard a bit of, I think it was Holly Smith, and I didn't catch the man's name, singing a very well-known song here called How Great Thou Art, which was sung decades ago by Māori crooner Sir Howard Morrison.
Teeks,
okay.
Did the same thing in Auckland, yes.
I did the same thing, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But since you mentioned Holly Smith, I thought she was one of the dud notes in terms of the musical performance. She looked bored when she wasn't singing, and when she was singing, she was all over the place. I wasn't overly impressed with her, which is a shame. She was on with Anika Moa, who, as far I mean, if you remember, you and I saw her.
Yes, we did. She opened for It wasn't Joan Armatrading.
Certainly was.
It was.
Yes. It was, yeah. And she's always good value.
Mm.
She's a very entertaining. I mean, even when she's not singing, when she's just talking.
She's lively and she's engaging.
I have a lot of time for Anika Moa. I've seen her a couple of times now. And it was an odd combination because on the one hand, frothy, lively, engaging. Why am I even here? She just gave off this slightly bored vibe. Which is a shame because what was happening was something really, really special. You've got an awful lot of people who have given their time to remind all of us that we must not forget what happened and that there are people left behind who need looking after and supporting.
Mm.
So it's a very, very important event.
Absolutely.
It was a fantastic thing. The mood in the venue was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
You could just feel people were there to be part of something bigger than them. It was a very, very nice feeling. I was really glad I was there. Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm glad you were too.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, you it's hard to know how to analyse it, really. As an event being done for a purpose, it was untouchable.
It was
absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it was well put together. Mike King as MC did a really, really nice job.
I imagine he would.
He was very good. There was just the nature of the thing was there was lots of moments where I had to just fill in as they were rejigging the stage.
So can I just ask you, I'm assuming that with that number of performers, each performer only maybe did one or two or three songs?
Either between two and four.
Okay.
Between two. I think Mitch James did four all up. He had the longest set. Dave Dobbin did one, then he came back on at the end, did one with Bit Wrong, and then he closed, obviously, with Slice of Heaven.
Right.
With the entire cast behind him.
Oh, lovely.
There was a nice mix. Yeah. It went really, really well.
Good.
And so they did as they were switching the stage, For the more electronic performers, like Ilbaz, for example, who was basically just working on a turntable, they got screens up, divider screens. And so behind them, they were getting the stage, switching drum kits and amplifiers and stuff.
Yes.
And then Mike King would come out, say a couple of words to the next guy, they'd just move the screens away, and there's the stage ready. So it was a really slickly produced thing. It was very well done. On a musical level, there was something for everybody. I was bored through Shapeshifter, but that's because that's not my taste. But I would imagine the people who were loving Shapeshifter probably weren't quite as impressed with, let's say, Jason Kerrison singing Hallelujah.
Yeah.
But they covered everything. They covered all the bases. The one thing I didn't like that jarred with me, I think I mentioned it in the review, your man from Swidert, at the end, raised his fist with a black glove on it. I'm thinking, yeah, I understand the point you're making, mate. It's a valid point. And at any other moment, I'd say, that, more of that, please.
Mm.
But not today.
Yeah.
Today it's not about you. Today it's about something very, very specific.
Yeah.
Just for now, please don't do that. And that didn't quite sit right for me.
Did you get a sense that others may have felt the same way? Or
I don't know. I didn't get a chance to talk to anyone else about it.
Fair enough.
But other than that, I was glad to have been there. I know I was half expecting the Prime Minister to show up. They did a video segment from her.
Okay.
Where obviously she said all the right things as only she can, and apparently Lord had commitments in the US that she couldn't get out of in Auckland,
but she actually turned up for the Christchurch show, did she not?
And I guess if you're going to do one of the two,
Christchurch is the one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
So, minor quibbles and caveats aside, I've got no idea how much money they actually managed to raise. I know it was $79 a ticket, and Spark Arena was packed out.
Oh, great.
So, to all involved, bloody good job, guys.
Yeah. Well, great. Fantastic.
Seriously.
So again, cravepodcast.com. Steve's got his review and a whole bunch of photographs. So, and it's a really good coverage. You Are Us Aroha Nui.
Yes.
Are coming together, and it was posted on the 14th of April.
It's still the top thing on the...
Rightly so.
By the time this goes live, it won't be anymore, but yes. But yeah, it was a good thing.
Sorry, where you go?
No, I was going to say that I'll stick with music, if that's okay.
Yeah, I think so, because the ball is rolling in your court.
Why not?
You also went along, and again, I'm afraid I wasn't able to join you, but to a guy... Look, I hadn't heard of Nathaniel Ratcliffe.
Ratcliffe.
It is Ratcliffe.
No, not even Cliff. Ratcliffe.
Ratcliffe.
Yes.
It's R-A-T-E-C-L-I-F-E.
No, there's no C.
Oh, there's no C.
No C in there. I'm guessing there's probably a Ratcliffe at some point in his
family. It's written as the C, but not pronounced with a C.
No, I believe there's no C. If I'm not mistaken.
All right, okay.
We'll check on that later.
Yeah, we'll do that. I may have just... Yes. No, you're right. I made a mistake.
Yeah. Because I'm guessing at some point in the family's history, they might have been Ratcliffe's.
Yes.
But not anymore.
Anyway, and his band, the Night Sweats.
Yes.
They were at the Auckland Power Station.
They were indeed.
And again, Steve's got his review up. And I see, Steve, from your photographs, a man with a guitar and what looks like a cowboy hat.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't
quite tell the whole story, that.
No, okay. And there's saxophone players, guitarists, drummers. He actually, I'm looking at his dance moves from your photographs on site, and it's...
Awkward.
Well, I'm not quite sure what to make of those dance moves.
No, neither was I, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, all right, we'll tell it. Yeah, I mean, he looks like he could be a country, folky, bluesy guy, but I'm not sure.
And that would be about right, yeah. So toss a bit of soul as well.
A bit of soul, okay.
Oh, yeah. So, like you say, the band lineup is relevant.
Okay.
So you've got your singer, you've got a guitarist and bassist, you've got standard horn section.
Right.
And you've got a keyboard player.
Yep.
On a lovely old school Hammond organ.
Oh, nice.
A lovely rich sound coming out of it. It's beautiful. And so this starts out, your man, the bass player, comes out. I can't remember his name. It's in the review, sorry.
Yeah.
Bass player comes out, getting seriously funky.
Yeah.
There's a whole slew of fun going on. The guitar's chopping away, and there's the keyboards are... and it's lovely. Out comes Nathaniel, and he starts singing, and it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do another one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like I say, it's bluesy, soul-y, funky, country-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Bit of rock.
Mm-hmm.
Great mix. And they did another one.
Okay.
And here's...
they start to sound the same after
they
a while?
Started to sound a little bit... Well, the problem was... do you ever wonder why it is that some bands make it to, like, world domination and others don't?
Mm-hmm.
And you think, there's got to be something about this band. And it's almost impossible in many cases to figure out why it is that this band are taking on the world. They're playing arenas and stadiums, and other bands are still playing back rooms in bars somewhere.
Mm.
And if you knew what it was that they had, you could bottle it and sell it.
Mm.
No one knows what it is, of course.
No.
But whatever it is, he's only got a tiny little bit of it, unfortunately.
Okay.
That was the thing. Because he's got a great voice. He really does.
Yeah.
He's got a fantastic band behind him. He writes a good song. Somehow.
What's his presence like on stage? Charisma, or I don't know, whatever word you want to throw into that.
That's probably a large part of it, isn't it? Not massive. No, I mean, there's nothing wrong. There was nothing objectionable. There was nothing
right.
Odd. There was nothing clangingly rubbish.
But it wasn't necessarily compelling.
It was not really a whole lot of engagement with the audience. Not, like I say, slightly awkward dance moves or the stepping back and arching his back head. It never really quite soared for me.
Okay.
As much as I wanted it to, because the music's good. I mean, he's promoting his new album. He got a song. The album opens with a song called Shoe Boot.
Shoe Boot. Okay.
Odd name for a song.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic rock, soul, blues, funk jam. And it works really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely sort of tricky drum rhythm and rich overlay keyboard line. And he's got this fantastic bluesy voice. And yet somehow, I wanted more from this. I don't want to say it was bad.
No. Oh, well, it's okay. Something that isn't quite good isn't necessarily bad either.
That's deep.
Yeah. Well, it is. I guess when you're fronting a band, something of who you are inevitably is revealed to the audience, isn't it? And for however much you're putting on an act and performing, something of your true self will probably be there for people to take some sort of assessment of. Maybe, I don't know, maybe there wasn't something for people to grab onto and hold onto and just take as their own. I don't know, I wasn't there. But
Well, a few nights later, I was at Aroha Nui.
Yes.
And as I was driving home, you know, just found myself going, da, 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 do, da. Mm-hmm. You know, certain things, you know, just stick with it. By the time I got on the motorway driving away from the power station, I'd kind of forgotten I'd been to a concert.
Right. Oh, that was loud.
I was about to say that you didn't hit the table, but then you did. So, okay. Right. So, tell you what then. Tell you what.
That's a good summary.
It's not fair to lay into the bloke. You've got a good show.
Yes.
But somehow. No.
Okay.
Not
interesting.
Quite.
Interesting.
So let's switch.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've noticed that for the next thing we need to work, you've even been getting into character.
Yes. I'm going to talk about zombies.
Exactly.
And if I slightly look as if I've been attacked by a zombie.
Well, for the pure podcast listeners, if you're not watching this on the podcast with pictures.
Yes.
Simon looks like he's at his. Yes.
I've got some a decent scar on my forehead.
How many stitches went into that?
Apparently about 40.
Wow.
So I had a little skin cancer removed a few days ago, and the stitches thankfully have come out, because I really would have looked rather grotesque.
I've seen the photo tonight. Trust me.
It's a good advertisement for just taking care in the sun, if nothing else.
Yes, and it also sets you up perfectly to talk about a zombie TV show.
Yeah, and it's called Black Summer.
It's a great name.
It's a good name. It's a Netflix series. Why would I watch that? Is probably the big question.
Well, I mean, first of all, these days there's so much on Netflix.
True.
That again, how do you figure out which is the show? It's like choosing bands to watch in concert. How do you figure out the one that's going to be?
I agree.
The next big thing.
One of the things, maybe before we answer that question, here's another question.
Go on.
Why would a zombie story?
Yeah.
Appeal to people? I mean, apart from the fact that it's a because you think of this. This one, there was, of course, the famous Walking Dead. Brad Pitt did one, World War Z. There have been all sorts of Night of the Living Dead. I mean, there's been a heap of zombie films. And in essence, apart from it's a dead person coming to life and wanting to take a bite out of you and make you a dead person.
Yes.
It's that whole apocalyptic thing. And those who are not have not yet affected, having to survive by their wits with maybe not many resources around them to make do. And I think that's probably the essence of the appeal of the story.
Right. Because, like you say, it's a universe that we've seen inhabited countless times.
And I did watch for a while The Walking Dead, and I got actually tired of it. It went on for many seasons. I watched a few and it got ponderously slow. They spent too long with.
And then didn't they then spin off into like Beware the Walking Dead?
Yeah, there was another one. Yeah. I just sort of saw that, and I thought I'll just have a little dip into it to see if years later that people are doing things a bit differently.
Something maybe spoke to you just a little bit.
Yeah, just to see. And I actually thought they did a very good job.
Okay. Yes,
and the main reason is
there's
very little dialogue.
Ooh.
Not much at all.
Okay.
the episodes are quite brief. There's only eight in the whole season, first season. The longest are about 40, 45.
Okay.
But towards the end of the season, there's a couple of 20-minute episodes. So you're really moving along fast.
Right.
The pace of the storytelling is quick with editing.
Yeah.
And they do this thing where they'll show a scene, there's mayhem being unleashed across a town, and people running in all directions. We follow one set of people. They pass an incident.
Mm-hmm.
We follow, and those people go on, and then later we come back to the incident and find out what happened to the two people who stopped
there. That's an interesting
So there's a lot of intersecting of characters as they crisscross, and that works quite well. It draws you in,
right?
Makes it quite your curiosity is genuinely piqued as to what will happen to that person. So I think all that worked well, and you'll be pleased to know that I had you on my mind as I was watching a good chunk of this.
So hang on, you watched Zombie, you think of me.
Yes.
Not sure I care for the progression there, Simon.
Well, knowing that you've spent a bit of time in Japan in your travels and lived there for a bit, I was really interested to see one of the main characters as a young Japanese woman who speaks Japanese and in the course of the entire first season is completely unsubtitled.
Ooh.
So we are hearing this person speak Japanese. She might literally know one or two words of English to other people who only speak English.
Right.
And they're trying to understand each other.
Mm.
And just by tone of voice and facial expression and a little bit of hand gesture, they're somehow managing to get something across to each other.
Right.
And I thought, in a way, if you are doing some sort of apocalyptic,
maybe
that's what might happen. You know, you might end up with someone who stuck with someone in another part from the part of the world, and you might have to try and make do. And I thought that was quite brave.
Yes.
It's set in America, and I thought Americans are quite conservative with those sort of things usually. But
well, no subtitles, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And I thought it was really... I didn't understand all of what was being said, obviously, get all the nuances, but enough comes through to make it interesting.
But I guess that lets you understand from the character's
point
of view.
Yeah.
Because whoever's engaging with her or trying to engage with her would have exactly the same experience you're having.
Yes, yeah.
So,
and just one other quick little thing I thought worked very well, as in Game of Thrones and other stories where we are now used to characters being killed off.
Yes.
Here, it is done in a unceremonious, in a matter-of-fact way.
They just get on with it.
They just get on with it because they have to.
Right.
And so it's not dwelt on. And I thought that maybe if you were faced with literally it's your life or you haven't got time to sit around and have a prayer and say how much you miss that person. You've got to keep running because you'll be chomped up yourself.
Well, yeah.
That was also quite a nice little...
Because now you mention it, I'm thinking about going back to Game of Thrones.
Yes.
All the big character deaths.
Wow, you think of Joffrey.
Yeah, they're all great big set pieces, aren't they?
Yes, even Tywin on the loo, and I mean,
they are. There's a big drama. Well, I'm hoping one day when I finally pop my clogs, it'll be a big drama around that as well. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, death is remarkably crap, really, isn't
it? Yes. So it's actually quite brief to watch.
Yeah.
And that's actually not a bad thing.
No,
you're not going to get bogged down in it for a long time. And the pace of it is such that I found myself thinking, this is quite a good little ride. You know, if you're not into zombie movies, I'm not going to say you must watch it. But there'd be worse ways to be diverted on a rainy day.
Well, I've got a long flight coming up ahead of me tomorrow.
Well,
download it.
Yeah, go on. Why not?
I'll give it a look. I'll practice my Japanese along.
All right. Now, we haven't talked a lot about zombies, but we sure have talked a lot about superheroes on Crave.
I do my level best to avoid jumping. Yeah,
well, I haven't seen a new superhero movie that's out, and you have. That in itself is quite a story.
It is, yes.
Shazam.
Absolutely.
I didn't even know. I thought Shazam was when you cast a spell on someone, you go, Shazam.
Well, you have to figure that's probably about the level of this.
Yes.
I mean, look, it's this is DC.
Yeah.
Who have... Oh dear Lord! They've played catch up so badly, haven't they?
Yeah.
I mean, these are the people who brought us Batman versus Superman, right?
The Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
another one. I think there's only one of theirs that I thought was commercially successful. Mm. Oh no, they had two. Wonder Woman. Well, that was all right.
Yes, you're right.
And Aquaman wasn't a fantastic movie, but it made a lot of money.
Undeservedly from what we heard.
Anyway, but generally I agree with you.
But certainly they're not nailing it consistently as Marvel did.
No, they're not.
And so Shazam is definitely a step away from the the grindingly, crushingly, intensely dull.
Yep.
Things like Batman versus Superman was plodding and ponderous and dull. Oh, it was horrible. It was also about 6 hours long, which is part of the problem.
Yes.
Shazam manages to sidestep a lot of those issues.
Okay.
So what we've got is, at its very, very core, you've got a young lad, Billy his name is, who he's an orphan who finds himself in the latest foster home. And he's obviously planning to run away from this one as well at some point. And he's stuck in sharing a room with a young lad named Freddy. And they're both getting picked on a little bit at school, usual sort of American high school trope. And then suddenly he finds himself, as he's sitting on the subway train in Philadelphia one day, summoned to the underground mystical lair of some sort of wizardy type bloke.
Mm-hmm.
Who basically says, if you hold on to my great big wooden staff and say my name, wonderful things will happen.
Okay.
He says, okay, fine, what's your name? And he says, Shazam. He says, what, Shazam? And next thing you know, he's become Shazam. So he's no longer this like 16-year-old boy.
Right.
He's big, strapping fella.
Right.
In a ridiculous...
Yes. Red and yellow sort of suit, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. The superhero cosy. With the cape and everything.
Yes.
Right? But he's still a 15-year-old boy.
Ah.
So that's what the film is.
Right.
And for the majority of the film, it's not really... You know, they say the best science fiction. It's not about the science, it's about the fiction.
Yes.
And it's not about whether you can, as I read somewhere just recently, whether you can go at 20 times the speed of light wearing anti-gravity boots. It's not about that.
No.
It's about the characters dealing with ethical problems and growing and... You know,
yes.
And the fact that they're doing it in space is just, you know... I think. And this is the same thing. This is two teenage boys.
Yeah.
Who've got a weird thing happens to them. And how does their relationship work out? And it generates all kinds of conflict between the right. two boys. And that's fun.
Yes.
And that's well done.
Yeah.
And I mean, seriously, I think the reason it's well done is it's not a superhero film at that point.
Yeah.
It's a two boys trying to figure out how the hell to make this thing work kind of film.
Yeah, yeah.
And on that level, it works quite nicely.
Okay.
It really, really does. And he turns out, you know, obviously he's a 15-year-old boy. He's a rubbish superhero, obviously, because he's still figuring out how to become a superhero.
Yes.
So yeah, it's an origin story in that level, because you always have to have your origin stories these days, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
But it's actually quite nicely done.
Okay.
But, obviously, there also has to be a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the bloke who was originally going to be Shazam, but obviously wasn't pure of heart.
Ah.
And so ends up with the seven deadly sins tagging along with him.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. Pile. And this is where it just becomes a pile of nonsense.
Okay.
Okay. And so you have to have the big superhero fight at the end.
Of course.
Of course.
De rigueur.
Oh, God. Yeah, the bollocks. It really is. Because obviously there's no peril in it.
Yes.
It's all completely weightless. Actually, literally in some places. Mm. And it feels like a sidestep away from the what's preceded it has been this nice teenage buddy comedy. That's suddenly become, oh bugger, yeah, we have to get the superhero fight in now, don't we?
Yeah.
Biff, bang, bish. And they do that, and obvious outcome, and then it ends.
Yeah.
And that's it. But while it's good.
It's good.
It's lovely.
Okay.
And then it becomes plodding.
Okay. I know it's, looking at the trailer and the imagery, it has that feel of something that would appeal to teenagers,
yes.
maybe. And then the school holiday's still on, and maybe
yeah, exactly.
it's sort of a movie that would be well suited
yes.
to that audience.
Yeah, I mean, it's daft, it's nonsense, but when it knows what it's about, it's fun.
Okay, well, that's nice.
And then it becomes a superhero film again. I mean, to be fair, DC have been, like we say, they've been on the back foot on this for
yeah.
ages. And you think Marvel, they can switch gears effortlessly. And so you've got the actual hardcore avenging stuff going on,
yeah.
which is... hardcore Avenger, but they do that so much better than like the Batman and Superman
yeah,
nonsense.
Yeah.
They then say, we're going to have a bit of fun with that, and
yes.
they get Taika Waititi in
to
have a blast,
and, yes.
the one genuinely good one of all.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a Kiwi who did it.
Funny that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So and then they say, right, and now we're going to change to something
yeah.
completely different, and they bring out Deadpool.
Yes.
Or
yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
They'll say, we can do anything we turn our hands
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Whereas DC, they're doing... Yeah, I mean, Wonder Woman was there. Even that was flawed.
It was, yeah.
But it was decent. But then they did Suicide Squad.
Oh, that was awful.
That was unforgivably bad. It was woeful. They just they finally starting to realise how to make these films
well,
work.
Just at the risk of talking yet more about this, there is a trailer out which I just happened to see of Joaquin Phoenix reprising the role of Joker, and it's about it, the story is apparently just about him. It's not a Batman movie, it's a Joker movie about his origins. I don't know the trailer. Steve is cringing. I'm not sure. I mean, he's kind of that manic sort of thing. Maybe that's he's suited to that sort of role. Of course, it's a hard act to follow if people remember Heath Ledger, but it could work.
It very much depends who's behind it.
Yes, who's writing, directing it. Absolutely. And I don't know those details right in front
of
me.
No, we don't. But unfortunately, if it's a DC property,
yeah,
simply on the balance of probabilities and previous experience, yeah, we have been burned so badly by those guys that I'm not really looking forward to it. I mean, I'm trying to cast my mind back. Suicide Squad.
Yes.
The Joker was in that, wasn't he?
He was, yes.
And that was...
Now this is... I just can tell you that it was directed... The new one is directed by Todd Phillips.
Not a name that springs readily to
mind.
I'm
just going
to
quickly check what else he's done. He's written and directed films like... Oh, War Dogs.
Oh, okay.
So Borat.
Oh.
The Hangover trilogy. You know those...
Yeah. Okay.
Road Trip. Anyway, so he's got some... You know, he's done a few decent things. I don't know.
Well, he's got some nice comedy background in there.
Yeah, he does. So, I'm not sure who the writer of it is, but anyway, we shall see. But look, we've got a really busy period about to be entered into by all who are interested in matters entertainment, Steve. Musically, film-wise.
Glad you asked.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, I think.
Glad that you asked, because...
Yes.
Now it's my turn to be the boring one looking at the computer wall.
No.
Yeah. This is not fantastic radio, is it?
Well, I mean, we're about a week away from other things. Stevie Van Zandt from the E Street Band is about a week away from a performance with his...
What do you mean about a week? You're counting the days. You know you are.
Yeah.
Don't be coy like that.
All right, then. So he's going to be in the Auckland Town Hall Saturday the 27th, I think it is.
Yes, it is.
And that will be a good show.
You think?
I think so. But that's just one of several. I think, and isn't Hosier the next night?
The next night, yes. At Spark Arena.
Yeah, so that's going to be a heck of a weekend for a start.
We've got a few announcements of festivals.
Yes.
How are you for reggae?
I'll be honest and say I've never been hugely into reggae. I've enjoyed it when I've heard it, but I've never been a huge follower.
Now, me neither, to be honest, which is a shame because there's quite a big reggae festival going to be touring around New Zealand in a couple of months.
Okay.
It's the... What are we calling it? The Good Vibes Festival. Catch a Fire, Tomorrow People, Josh Wawa, Latasha Lee. I mean, I've heard the names. I'm not fans of the oof.
Yeah. Catch a Fire, I caught a bit of them at two summers ago now, Steve. That big concert at Western Springs. It was like the City Limits.
Yes.
They were one of the headline acts there. They were very, very good.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be... If you're into reggae, I think that would be great. A great show.
From the middle of July to the middle of August, they will be in variously Napier, Gisborne, The Mounds, I assume that means Mount Maunganui,
mm-hmm.
Auckland, Porirua, Hamilton, and Tokoroa.
Okay.
So there's that. There's also another festival coming up.
Is this the Mardi Gras?
This is the Mardi Gras Festival.
Ohakune,
and also Queenstown.
Okay.
They've got both dates coming up.
So two winter season locations.
Yes. Now the big draw at Mardi Gras is going to be Mitch James.
Hold on, why do I know Mitch James?
Because I just mentioned him a few minutes ago. Because he played at Aroa Nui.
Thank you.
So that's where we know the name from.
Yes,
and he's not bad. I mean, he's possibly a little bit unremarkable, but he's a nice young lad with a guitar.
Okay.
And he knows what he's doing with
it. All right, fair enough.
Did a very nice cover version of Robbie Williams' Angels.
Okay.
That was surprisingly good. Now he's going to be at where is he? 22nd of June is at Ohakune,
mm-hmm.
And then we're also the next night in Queenstown.
Okay.
Wow, that's pushing it a little bit. But then he's also doing a tour of his own.
Yes, I saw that on out. Okay.
Yeah, yep. And that's going to be leading up to those dates,
mm-hmm.
And he's going to be doing Nelson, Auckland, Tauranga, Dunedin, Wellington, and indeed Christchurch.
Okay.
He's a busy lad.
Yep.
He's not a bad performer, isn't young Midge. He's definitely worth going to see.
Okay.
He's nice. I quite liked him. Now, other music. Not a big fan myself, but Khalid. More for the youngsters, this one.
I think. Okay.
Yes. How are we going to even describe? R&B-ish, rap-ish.
Okay.
That end of the spectrum, not really my thing, but he's going to be bringing the Free Spirit Tour to Auckland on Thursday the 21st of November.
Okay. I also noticed on the updates on the website, that's cravepodcast.com. Steve, I know from time to time we do get British comics coming through, and we've had them from time to time over the years. There's a guy here, I see you've got a note in, Dara O'Brien, I think they pronounce his
Dara
name.
Dara O'Brien, yeah.
Who has been around for a while in that part of the world. I've seen him a bit on YouTube clips of this and that. Is he quite a well-loved chap over in the UK?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, he isn't.
Yeah.
A British comic.
No, he's Irish, isn't
he's Irish.
Yes, son.
You Australians always get that one. Yeah, he's very, very highly regarded.
Okay.
Back in the Northern Hemisphere. He's been hosting Mock the Week.
I have.
He's brilliant on that.
One thing I find with him, I sometimes struggle to understand him because I find he talks quite quickly. And he doesn't have a thick Irish brogue, but there's something about the lilt of his voice. I don't get everything he says.
One thing he does, and I do this myself occasionally, maybe it's my Irish heritage, but sometimes it's... Do you remember when we saw Bob Dylan?
Yes.
Right? And every song started with different members of the band sort of noodling around together.
Yes,
and it took a few bars for the song to coalesce.
Yes.
His sentences do the same thing.
Yes, I think you're right.
There you go. Now I know what I'm going to say.
And
he does have a bit of a tendency to do that.
Yeah, and he does talk quick.
He does. That's the Irish thing, yeah. But he is very funny.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
A lot of time for Dara O'Brien. And he's going to be in Wellington, Friday the 20th of September, Saturday the 21st of September, Auckland, ASB Theatre, and then Monday the 23rd, Christchurch in the Town Hall.
And it's a show called Voice of Reason.
Yes. Now, I mean, the guy, his, at university, he did either physics or maths, I forget which, and he often does an awful lot of science-oriented material.
Oh, okay.
He's done shows with people like Brian Cox.
Okay, yes.
So that's the kind of level he works at.
Right.
So as well as being sort of, you know, like general purpose comedian, if he's got a niche, he does tend toward the scientific.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
I think it'd be really, really interesting.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. Okay, there's heaps of
announcements. We've not had the big one yet.
Oh, forgive me.
Oh, you don't know about... Three nights next year. Monday the 10th of February in Dunedin.
Yeah.
Auckland, Friday the 7th of February. And Wellington is Wednesday the 5th of February. Queen are coming back.
Hold on, haven't they just been here?
Last year.
Oh, so it's just last
year. They were here a year ago.
Okay.
Just over a year ago.
I imagine because of the massive success of that film, they've decided they need to get back out on the road again.
So you mean on the Rhapsody tour?
Oh, really?
Really, yes.
Well, how about that?
Well, who can blame them?
Absolutely. That was a phenomenally successful, just in commercial terms, hugely successful film.
And I mean, critically slammed, but I want to go to a sing-along performance of it.
Ah.
Where you're actually allowed to sing along out loud when they play Bohemian Rhapsody. I saw them a couple of years ago, last year, it'll be 2 years by the time they come back. I saw them last year at Spark Arena.
You did?
And they were very, very, very good.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, Adam Lambert will never be Freddie.
No.
Right?
So,
go ahead.
They spent $52 million making that film.
And how much did they make?
$900 million.
Yeah, sounds about right, yeah.
nearly a billion.
That should keep Brian May in Hairspray for a few more weeks.
I think so.
But he's fantastic. I mean, the guy can play guitar. Think of the riffs he's written.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing things like Fat Bottom Girls and Tie Your Mother Down and all those amazing, crunchy, crunchy riffs. And Adam Lambert, like I say, no attempt to be Freddie Mercury whatsoever.
No.
You'd be a fool to try.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he even has the common sense and the courage, to be fair, to address it head on. He says, I'm not Freddie.
Mm.
Who could be?
Mm.
And so I'm going, but these guys have trusted me.
Yes.
You know, they carry Freddie's legacy. They've trusted me to reinterpret these songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm honoured to be here.
Yes.
And that's the vibe he gives off.
I think it's absolutely the right way to do it. Yes.
Well, he plays it. with just the right trying to pull off humility and swagger at the same time.
Yeah, not easy.
Tough call, but he does it. That's the thing that makes it work.
Yes, yes.
And he's got they've got Roger Taylor on drums, and they've got obviously Brian May is front and centre. So, mm-hmm. I mean, basically, it's May and Lambert.
Yes,
it's their show.
Yeah,
and they clearly trust each other a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fantastic. Brian May clearly realises this is the guy.
Yeah, well, and he has a voice.
he does, and he's got the right kind of presence as well on stage. He knows how to.
Yeah,
I mean, he is camp in a way that only Freddie Mercury also could ever be. And he owns it.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
One of the my strongest memories of Adam Lambert was when he first appeared on the American Idol program.
Yeah.
And there was a public vote. And he got down to the final. It was him and some country singer.
Yeah.
He was clearly, evidently, obviously the best singer by a long, long, long way.
Yeah.
But the American public voted the safe conservative country singer as the... as their winner.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't remember what that guy's name was, but I remember who Adam Lambert is.
Have you ever noticed the winners of those shows are never the ones who go anywhere?
Yeah.
It's always the runners up who end up being the big hits. And I think you're right, yeah. Yeah, so some flamboyantly camp rock star against a safe conservative country and western all American good old boy.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much what it was.
And yet, like you say, who's the one we're going to go and see it? They're actually playing Mount Smart Stadium. They've moved up. They were at Spark Arena last time.
Okay, that's interesting.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, fantastic. So a lot to look forward to. Thank you very much for watching, for listening.
Absolutely.
We better wrap this up. We do love to hear from you. You can email Steve and I at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. We're at Crave Podcast.
With unerring,
God-canning
accuracy of
those,
of a name.
The zombies have been at you, haven't they, Mac? I can tell you.
My mind is beginning to go. The scar is playing on me. Anyway,
absolutely,
I hope to be back next time. I'm Simon Mercer.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.
Certainly is.